Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, welcome to Contemplations. I am Josh, and I am joined by Harry.
Hello there.
And what we're going to be talking about today is why monopolies ruin everything. And in particular, we're going to be focusing on how antitrust laws create unfair advantages for certain companies and how state-run industries are always doomed to fail eventually. And we're going to kind of be talking about these areas specifically, because if we talked about all of the areas where you can have monopolies and stifled competition, then we would be here for weeks. And I mean, I would love that, but I imagine...
Yes, I imagine the viewers might have a few issues with it somehow. Like, for God's sake, please stop.
But anyway... Why monopolies ruin everything is probably one of the most important things in politics at the minute, in my opinion at the very least, because I think that a lot of the problems we see today with a few companies owning large market shares...
We can think of a few examples off the top of our heads, you know, companies like Amazon buying out loads of stuff. Recently, Microsoft have bought out Activision Blizzard, who and also bought out Bethesda and companies like that. So there's a chance that if you're on any sort of console that isn't Microsoft owned, that their future products won't be able to be accessible to you unless you buy their products. So it can be a real sort of market force for forcing you to buy their products when you don't necessarily want to.
And then you have other kind of tech areas like your Apples, your Googles, your Microsofts.
Yeah, I don't think many people like the knowledge that a few companies own basically everything. I mean, Disney is probably the most egregious one that we know of at the moment in terms of a film and television media products and whatnot, because they own, what is it? They bought out Star Wars, they bought out Lucasfilm, they bought out... recently they bought out Fox, so they bought everything. So if you want all of those products, you have to go to their products and services like Disney Plus, and there's no way I'm going to pay for Disney Plus anytime soon.
No, rightly so.
Rightly so.
So I would argue that out of the trio of economy, government, and society, the economy is the more central controlling force out of the three. I don't know whether you agree with that. That's not going to be something that everyone agrees with, but I believe that
you've separated society into something separate from the economy, but the economy
are obviously
very
linked.
Intertwined with one another, because of course
all factors are
an economic
linked together,
system yeah. such as that derived from Marxist principles like we saw in the USSR creates a very different type of society to one based on liberal economic principles like the one that we wish we were in currently. So the two of them do sort of go hand in hand, because the economy really is the distribution of scarce resources, and how you distribute those determines what you're allowed to do. For instance, if you've got a particular substance that's controlled entirely by the government sets the terms on what you can do with that and how you can obtain that, which will determine in turn what you do with your life to try and obtain those.
Obviously, there's shifting power between these factors, and market forces seem to me to control politics more than vice versa. However,
attempts there being is, made to shift that balance.
Yeah, to suggest that government is entirely controlled by the economy is not true, because the government shapes how the economy emerges and manifests in many different ways, which we are going to talk about pretty. Yes. Excessively here.
Before we get into any further, would you like to define, for anybody who may be an absolute beginner, not know what any of the terms mean, what a monopoly is?
A monopoly is just one company controlling everything, or it could be also a state controlling everything. So in one specific industry. So it'd be fair to say, to use your Soviet Union example, the Soviet government had a monopoly on steel production, because they were the only people producing steel.
Yes.
And at least that's an example off the top of my head. there'll be someone in the comments probably just like, actually, in 1985, they also opened up some competition or something. I don't know.
I think but for...
As an example, it works.
I think for another example, that wasn't it Venezuela was entirely state-owned oil?
Yes.
Because that was their biggest resource, and it was like 40% of the economy in Venezuela or something like that.
We should look at the economy of Venezuela because there's lots of interesting lessons to be had there. They basically used their oil money to fund ridiculous welfare.
Yes.
And then eventually...
Didn't they also pull a Vorsch and force all of the businesses to be co-ops? And then all of the businesses degenerated into filthy capitalistic co-ops who didn't want to let anybody else in because it would reduce the amount of profit each of the individual members was getting.
Yeah, it's almost like these socialist policies don't work, isn't it?
I know, right?
So moving on to the importance of competition, even the White House website, which has a vested interest in creating monopolies, highlights the importance of them. And I was actually quite surprised that it was coming from an institution which is a monopoly in and of itself, in that, you know, you can only have the one
government.
Mm-hmm, well, one federal government anyway.
Yes.
So this article is called The Importance of Competition for the American Economy, and it reads, "Healthy market competition is fundamental to a well-functioning economy. Basic economic theory demonstrates that when firms have to compete for customers, it leads to lower prices, higher quality of goods and services, and greater variety and more innovation. Competition is critical not only in product markets, but also in labor markets. When firms compete to attract workers, they must increase compensation and improve working conditions." And it continues a bit later on, "When there is insufficient competition, dominant firms can use their market power to charge higher prices, offer decreased quality, and block potential competitors from entering the market, meaning entrepreneurs and small businesses cannot participate on a level playing field, and new ideas cannot become new goods and services." Which is actually pretty well put.
Yes, very efficiently put, gets it all out there. Mm-hmm. Just as a disclaimer as well for anybody watching, I am sort of in the very much basics of knowing about economics. So if I maybe get a few things wrong here or there,
all right,
ask for certain concepts or other things to be clarified, please just know I'm still in the process of learning all of this stuff myself.
No, it's good to have someone who asks the questions that the people at home are probably thinking. I'm not expecting everyone to know everything that I'm talking about, otherwise I imagine they wouldn't be watching. So questions are good.
Yes, that is good. But on the subject of labor as well, in terms of there's lots of different aspects that can be bad from a if you've got a monopoly and you're a worker and you only have the choice of maybe one business to work for. And one of those things that I'm sure many people are very familiar with nowadays is that the business gets to set the parameters of what you are allowed to say and think in business. For instance, Coca-Cola putting all of their employees through anti-whiteness training or anti-racist training and stuff like that. And if you speak up against it, you're always sort of on the knife's edge over whether you're going to lose your job or not.
Just join Pepsi, that would be...
Yeah, maybe just join Pepsi, but I don't know what they're doing either.
They're obviously probably just as bad, to be honest.
Yeah, that's the thing, obviously. It doesn't apply to every company nowadays, but those massive companies all sort of have a vested interest in making you think how they think. Or at least as it stands at the moment when we're in the joyous throes of stakeholder capitalism.
I think that much of this, we may as well get onto it before we get into the meat and potatoes of the conversation. I think that a lot of the things driving these cultural elements in business, it's all kind of putting on a bit of a face. I think many of the people who make up these organizations, they have no vested interest to promote these ideas. They actively undermine their own position a lot of the time because...
If you're promoting everybody to be anti-business and you're the head of a business,
yes,
it doesn't make much sense to me.
Well, they give you a veneer of being, you know, we're so welcoming of diversity and we want all the best for everyone. We want to be fair. We're an ethical company. They give this presentation, but behind the scenes, sometimes at least, they will be behaving very differently. I mean, there are lots of cases of actual affirmative action going on and things like that within companies, which is pretty bad and a good example of this being a genuine thing where it seems like at least someone believes it, but then it could also be a product of the kind of HR department pressuring hiring procedures and things like that, and it not necessarily being an entirely top-down thing, but they're just like, well, we kind of want to, we don't want to push back on this because it'll look bad, so we're kind of too far into it now.
Mm. A good example of what Josh is talking about there in terms of how they behave in public and how they behave in private is Hollywood, for instance, is a business. And we all know the sorts of face they like to put out publicly, but at the same time, we all actually knows what goes on behind the closed doors. All you need to do is look back at the Harvey Weinstein and people like that, who at the time when he was being called out was being trying to promote lots of humanitarian causes. He was like, "Oh, I'm so angry about the fact that all of these women have told everyone that I raped them, so I'm just going to give loads of money to the NRA because that's a nice progressive cause." So that really was a case of trying to save face right there. Didn't really
as
work.
In the National Rifle Association?
Oh, no, sorry. No, he's trying to give money to groups against the NRA. Sorry, I mixed up my terminology there.
I just imagine Harvey Weinstein in some kind of scandal. I know what will make the left like me more, donating to the NRA.
Comes out onto his lawn, get off my lawn.
But the discussion we're going to go into, we're going to look at monopolies from two kind of differing perspectives, both the Austrian and Chicago schools kind of economic perspectives. And when it crops up, I will make the distinction about how and why these perspectives differ in some cases and sometimes they don't. But first, it's important to understand the laws which regulate monopolistic practices and competition. So, moving on to antitrust laws. So this Investopedia article provides a definition of what an antitrust law is, because you can be excused if you don't know what they are, because they are almost not only quite boring to learn about, but don't worry, I've made it as interesting as I can. There also is quite a vested interest in not knowing about them, right? Because
yes,
knowing about the things that are limiting the economic forces that shape our economy, it's probably a good thing to most companies.
Well, if everybody knew how the economy worked, it would be much more difficult to convince people that your nice sounding idea is going to actually do anything effective. Mm-hmm.
So the definition they give of antitrust laws is as follows. Antitrust laws are regulations that encourage competition by limiting the market power of any particular firm. They often involve ensuring that mergers and acquisitions don't overly concentrate market power or form monopolies, as well as breaking up firms that have become monopolies. Antitrust laws also prevent multiple firms from colluding or forming a cartel to limit competition through practices such as price fixing. Due to the complexity of deciding what practices will limit competition, antitrust law has become a distinct legal specialization. So, from this definition, which I think is a relatively good definition as far as I'm aware, not a legal scholar, but I at least understand somewhat antitrust laws.
Sounds good to me.
It sounds like they're actually doing quite a good and noble thing, because, of course, we described that monopolies are very damaging, aren't they? They aren't very pro-consumer by definition, of course. The laws of supply and demand mean that if they control all of the supply, then the service for the consumers, the demand for their services, is going to be worse.
Well, yeah, if you've got someone who controls the entire supply, say, of cabbages, and there's still a big demand for cabbages, they get to pick whatever price they want to sell the cabbages for.
You could see this in American pharmaceutical companies, where they have a patent or they have the intellectual property rights to a certain drug, and then they set the price something like, I don't know, 700 times higher than the cost of production, because no one else can make it, because they have a monopoly on Martin Shkreli, wasn't it?
Yes, Martin Shkreli, that's what he went to prison for, wasn't it? Because he was setting the prices for HIV drugs like 5,000 times what they should have been.
I'm not sure if that was actually what he ended up going
to
prison over. I think he was doing some other shady business. That was what everyone hated him for, but I think that was actually legal. I might be wrong about that. I can't remember. It's quite a while ago.
Yeah, well,
but I think it was some kind of funny business about paying his taxes that he actually got caught
for. That's always what gets him, isn't it? If you can get Capone on taxes, you can get anyone on taxes.
So another Investopedia article gives a good outline of the three main antitrust laws in the United States, which more or less provide a similar blueprint for antitrust laws in other countries, although I think in Europe, particularly the European Union, They're particularly hard on companies and trying to break them up. So we'll see in some later examples that actually in the United States, they're a little bit more laissez-faire about this sort of thing. Whereas in Europe, and particularly in the European Union, they will try and prevent companies a lot more often. But that's not really a surprise. Who would have thought that the European Union interferes in stuff?
Usually makes it worse.
Yes. So the first one is the Sherman Antitrust Act, which I believe came out in 1890. So this goes back quite a ways, which intended to prevent unreasonable contract combination or conspiracy in restraint of trade and monopolizations, attempted monopolization or conspiracy or combination to monopolize. That's really the word monopolized too many times in one sentence. Violations against the Sherman Antitrust Act can have severe consequences, with fines up to 100 million for corporations and 1 million for individuals, as well as prison terms of up to 10 years, which is pretty harsh.
That's pretty harsh. Yeah.
Yes. And then the next one, which sought to strengthen the Sherman Act, the Federal Trade Commission Act bans unfair methods of competition and unfair deceptive acts and practices. According to the Supreme Court, violations of the Sherman Antitrust Act also violate the Federal Trade Commission Act. Therefore, even though the FTC cannot technically enforce, that's the Federal Trade Commission, cannot technically enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act, it can bring cases under the FTC Act against violations of the Sherman Antitrust Act. So it's just granting more power to an arm of the federal government to enforce these laws. And then we have the Clayton Antitrust Act, which addresses specific practices that the Sherman Antitrust Act may not address. According to the FTC, these include preventing mergers and acquisitions that may substantially lessen competition or tend to create a monopoly. See the softening of the language here.
Oh, yeah.
Preventing discriminatory prices, services and allowances in dealing between merchants, requiring large firms to notify the government of possible mergers and acquisitions, and imbuing private parties with the right to sue for triple damages when they have been harmed by conduct that violates the Sherman and Clayton Acts, as well as allowing the victims to obtain court orders to prohibit further future transgressions.
And in that sort of case, the private parties and victims would more than likely be other businesses, wouldn't they?
They might be, yeah.
Yes,
CEOs representing the shareholders of their company more often than not.
Often in practice. And one thing that you pointed out there was the softening of the language, but all of them have relatively, other than just saying monopoly and monopolize over and over again, what they're describing is kind of vague terms of we feel like you're owning maybe a bit too much of the market share. There's no definitive parameters put around what they mean. So there is something we need to talk about in regards to the stated intentions of these laws versus the actual consequences and effects that these laws have, especially when we're talking about laws like the Sherman Antitrust Act, which are from 1890, whereas you can imagine the a lot of the parameters that we're talking about and the circumstances were very, very different to how they are now. So there is a question of whether these laws still contextually apply to the times that we're in now.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.